Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Crackers, napkins, Clorox disinfecting bleach, check. Now roses, what if they wilt?
Attention shoppers, Clorox disinfecting bleach is a great way to keep flowers fresh for longer. It'll even work for that ink stain on your shirt.
Ah, not again.
Clean anything with the versatile Clorox disinfecting bleach. Discover more hacks at Clorox.com/learn.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to the Goldmine Podcast. This is Patrick Prince, editor of Goldmine. Goldmine is the music collector's magazine since 1974, focusing on the music collecting hobby, which is everything from record collecting to music memorabilia across all generations and all genres, but usually centering on the most classic artists of rock and roll. If you don't already subscribe, please do at goldminemag.com. You can pick up the magazine, the most current magazine issue, at select Barnes & Noble and Books A Million newsstands. If you can't find it there, you can order it online at our store, shop.goldminemag.com, where you can also get vinyl records, CDs, and collectibles. Now, our subject of this episode is singer-songwriter based in Moscow, Nash Albert. With all the news focused on Russia's attack on Ukraine lately, it's a nice change to focus on the music coming from Russia and Russian-based artists, and Nash Albert is one of those. His music is rock and roll, but eclectic and, quite frankly, refreshing. We need more rock and roll like this in a decade that seems to lack powerful rock music in general. Nash was born in Georgia, the country, and grew up in Moscow. Nash Albert grew up in, he grew up on rock records smuggled into the USSR when he was a kid. And then he formed a band called Salamandra. After the fall of the Berlin Wall, him and the band moved out to L.A. where, they didn't find a lot of success, but they developed important connections in the music world. When he returned to Moscow in the late 90s, he formed another band called Blast, which became very popular in Russia. But in 2014, he decided to produce his own solo music, and that's where we are now as he releases his first solo album called Yet, which is really worth picking up. And you'll hear some snippets, some samples throughout the podcast episode. So we will be right back after this message with Nash Albert calling from Moscow, and he would tell his interesting story. How are you?
Good, very good.
I quite like the new album Yet.
Thank you.
So it is very good, and turns out you are a seasoned musician. You're a veteran. You've been, I mean, you've been on the Los Angeles scene. You've been on the UK scene, Russia.
I've been everywhere, man. South Africa, Europe, you name it.
So let's start from the beginning so listeners can understand Nash Albert. Originally, you're from a country called Georgia. It was formerly the Soviet Union.
Yeah. I'm Georgian, and I was born there, but I was raised in Moscow because my father was very well-known physicist, and he was like acting in Moscow. He was director of Institute of Nuclear Research in Moscow.
Gotcha.
So I was raised here. I finished school here, then university. And then after university, I went to States with my band for 6 years, man.
Yeah. I was reading in your bio how you got turned on to rock and roll from smuggled records. What kind of records were...
I mean, yeah, when we were kids, it was impossible to buy a record in the shop. You know, there was no foreign records in the shops. So basically, we were getting them from smugglers or our parents or relatives who were going abroad. They were bringing some records back. So when I was 6 years old, it was my father. He came back from Japan. He was lecturing in Japan. And he brought me two cassettes. Do you remember cassettes? It was Superstar, Jesus Christ, Rock Opera, and the Best of Beatles. And I was blown away, man. I thought, I mean, immediately, I was a kid. But it was so attractive and it was so mind-blowing that probably in 3 months' time, I knew all the songs. I couldn't play, but I was singing them. I just knew a little bit of English. But I knew all the melodies, and, you know, that was the time when I decided I'm going to play rock and roll.
And you picked up guitar?
I picked up guitar a little bit earlier when I was 10, 11. I had an awful Soviet guitar, man, with these thick strings. It was just my fingers were bleeding. It didn't have a sound at all, but at least, you know, you could get some sounds out of the chords, and it was amazing.
Pop music, if it wasn't smuggled, what was pop music in Russia at the time?
It was mostly pop music, like all the singers, all the Soviet composers writing songs for singers. There were songs about basically about nothing, about how they love Soviet Union, you know, all this shit, man. It was junk, man, to be honest.
So it was like,
I mean, there were some great melodies. There were some great melodies.
Right.
There were a lot of talented people that, but because of they were censored, they had to sing shit.
Yes, I understand.
I know what I mean, yeah.
Right. It wasn't their emotions necessarily, it was the state. Then after the fall of the Berlin Wall, so to speak, you went directly to California, right?
It was a little bit, I think it was, yeah, probably the same. When I was 16 or 17, I was in college, Moscow State University, and Perestroika started. So we were allowed to sing in English and play rock and roll. And it was like small student union. And we had like gear to play live gigs. And we started to play live gigs, you know, in front of students. Then, I mean, we became pretty popular in college circuit in Moscow. Then we got invitation from University of Belgium. So we went to Belgium. It was my first trip abroad in 1988, I think. And it was very successful because, I mean, first gig, it was 3,000 Belgian students come to see Russians. Who are they, man? They called us, right? We were Georgians, but they were called Russians. Everybody was Russian.
Right.
And it was pretty success. A few gigs we played, they came back. And then in 2 years' time, we flew to States. And it lasted for 6 years.
But it was, you know, like any entertainment center, it's hard to compete.
Yeah.
I think that's the first thing you said in your bio that you found out. But you did meet some good connections there.
Yeah, you know, because it started like we met a guy in Moscow. There was lots of foreigners, Americans coming to Moscow, do businesses and stuff. And there was one guy, he was trying to find some bands, you know, to bring them back to stay. So we met him and he invited us and he said, hey, guys, come down. I'll do a little tour for you. And let's see how it goes. So basically we flew to States. It was like six of us, like four band members and two friends. And we had $200, that's it.
Wow.
We didn't have a clue, man, where we were going, to be honest. We just knew states from magazines, you know, from all these nice pictures. And we thought, yeah, man, we're going to do it like this. So we flew down, we played those gigs. Then we met another guy, the booking agent. And that's how it started. You know, we were doing lots of gigs around, mostly down south. Driving old van, you know, it was real rock and roll life. And it, to be honest, it was my first experience of real rock and roll, you know what I mean?
Right. That's in the south of in America, right? That must have been interesting culture shock.
No, yeah, it was pretty much culture shock because, you know, we had to do a lot of jobs to get money, you know, because music wasn't feeding us. So we're doing all sort of things, you know, but that was a hell of experience.
I'm sure it was. But then you moved back to Moscow, right, in the mid-90s?
In 96, I came back to Moscow, and it was totally different city, man. It was such a free city. People were partying 24-7, man. Lots of clubs, lots of live music. Lots of great bands were here playing at this time. And I put my band together called Blast. Mm. And we became extremely popular within a couple of months in Moscow club circuit. Because, I mean, I came back with a hell of experience. I knew Nirvana, I knew Pearl Jam, I knew real American rock and roll. I was like, when I was in Soviet Union, I was mostly a listener and imitator of these things. But in America, I've learned that the way that rock and roll is the way to live, basically. That's how you live. So I had a hell of experience, and we put band together, and it went really, really good, man.
You made an interesting comment about Moscow in the mid-90s. It came with a lot of freedom, but there was also a lot of corruption and crime.
Yeah, but I mean, we didn't care, man. We were musicians then. Gangsters loved us. Businessmen loved us. Students loved us. You know, foreigner expats loved us. We had a great time.
How do you compare the music scene now to then in Russia?
In Moscow, yeah. I think in the 90s, it was much more wide open.
Yeah.
Lots of different interesting bands. Now it's pretty boring because then when the radio stations started to take power, A&R guys, you know, they mostly started to push the bands who were singing in Russian.
Yes.
So bands who were singing in English, you know, they stayed on the club level. We were still cool, but bands who were singing in Russian, they were promoted by TV, by radio. So they picked up, and now they're big bands in Russia. But it's still boring, man. I don't think Russian rock and roll is an exciting thing, man, to be honest.
Did you ever try singing some of your music in native tongue in Russia?
Russian? Yeah, I did a couple of Russian songs, and they were very successful. They were in radio. A couple of them became hits.
Yeah. Do you think that English just has better harmonies to work with?
I think it's, to be honest, I think the English language is very natural to rock and roll, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, it comes together with the roots of rock and roll. So it's very natural. Compared with Italian, Russian, German, you name it. That's
Makes
my
sense.
Opinion. Yeah.
Now let's talk about the Yet album.
Yeah.
Now, what I do love about long playing albums, full albums, is if they're eclectic, and they have certain accents in the music, and you do both well. I hear a lot of Dylan, Bowie, Beatles, even Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
I like when you take it and give it a, you'll go from singing a song, a driving song, and then start off another song like Leonard Cohen, talking sort of spoken word poetry.
That's how it came, to be honest. This album came very naturally, you know. The story of this album is that a friend of mine who played together in States.
Yes.
I came back to Moscow, started my other band, Blast. He went to Georgia and became a very successful businessman. So one day he called me and said, hey, man, I built the studio in the mountains. Why don't you just come down? Let's get together with old mates from Salamandra, like four of us who were in States. And let's record something exciting. Let's at least try. So I flew down And, you know, it just came out so naturally because we were free of any cliches. You know, now a lot of young bands, they're thinking about sound. Oh, man, we should keep the same sound in the during the album. Or, and I think it's all, it's a pile of shit, man. And
it we were just too free. Predictable.
Yeah. We were free. We were doing songs and we were doing exactly what we felt the song needs. If it needs screaming, I was screaming. If it is low, I was doing lows. If it needs guitars, it had guitars. If it needs keyboard, I mean, we were just doing something exciting, which was exciting for us. I would, because most of the album, I mean, in '60s, the story was pretty much the same because bands were experimenting a lot.
Right.
Now you listen to the new bands, every song, the sound is the same, pretty much. They might have one hit.
Right.
Rest of all the album is boring. So we were just doing songs.
It's true. I completely agree with you. The music becomes too predictable. It becomes boring. That's why I like eclectic albums, because it challenges you. It gives you, you don't know what's next. You go through the various emotions. Yeah. And that's what, like you said, a lot of albums in the 60s, like Sgt. Pepper.
Exactly that I wanted to say.
Yeah. And now I like how you start out, the opener is a driving rock and roll song called Kill the Fear.
Kill the Fear, yeah.
Love it because it's a take on the emotion that is really it's ruling the human psyche right now.
Exactly.
And it's a shame, and it's everything. It's COVID, it's politics, it's you name it.
And you know what, the whole idea of this song is that we were talking, you know, we had a lot of time in studio and we were sitting lots of time talking, discussing, sharing thoughts. There's a lot of fears inside all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Who's stopping us from developing? Who's stopping us from risking? Who's stopping us to do something, to develop as a person, you know what I mean? To be strong, to be honest, to be straightforward, because you're so afraid, oh, well, if I say this, then it's gonna come back to, you know what I mean, yeah?
Yes.
And this song, this song was written right in the studio and recorded in 3 takes, just within a couple, 3 hours, man. It was just experimental song, mostly jamming. And the whole idea is that these fears, which stopping us from develop to a better person, to a stronger person, then you should deal with it and you should kill it, man.
And that's how most creativity is oppressed by fear. You're right.
Yeah, suppressed by fear. You're right.
And some some leaders like that. But, socially, they don't want music or culture to challenge anything.
You're right. They'd rather keep it flat, keep them like a bunch of sheep, you know. Oh, man, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The sad thing is that, like, millions and millions of people are becoming captives of some political idiot ambitions, you know?
Right.
And that's very sad. That's what I see around. Look at Ukraine, look at Georgia, look at Arabic countries. I mean, look at Middle East. I mean, it's terrible because of somebody's stupid ambitions. Like, thousands of people are dying, and they are captives of their ambitions.
A lot of people don't think for themselves and just follow them. Right.
And this propaganda is terrible, man. It comes from TV, it comes from the radio, it comes from the internet. I mean,
And it doesn't matter what country, it's all countries.
Man. No. I think it's a propaganda times. All the countries are competing in who has the best propaganda.
Anti-science, anti-fact. It's really scary, actually.
Okay.
Now, one of my favorite songs is Cocaine Hangover.
Oh yeah.
And not the subject matter, it's just such a good song.
Yeah, the story of this song, it was written actually 10 years ago. We had a gig, then we were partying all night long with all the staff, you name it. And it was like 9 in the morning and we were sitting drinking beer still, you know. And it was American Starlight Diner in Moscow. It was open 24 hours. So we're having beer. Suddenly the whole idea came to my head. And I said to the guys, hey, man, let's go to the studio. I want to do some demo. And I did the demo of this song, and it was on the shelf for 10 years. And when I was recording, yet it came out to my head, I don't know, spontaneously. Yeah. And we just decided to play it, try it, and build it up. And eventually it came to the good song, man.
It's hard to believe that song was shelved for 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years. It was written in 2010, I think, maybe 2009 even.
Well, thankfully, you know, you released it.
Yeah. You know, everything has its time, man, I think. It's coming from above. Everything, success, failure, has its time, you know.
But that, I think the song that is the catchiest is Sunrise.
Sunrise. That.
Maybe you're another one who tries to find the way to paradise. Maybe you're another one who tries to find the way to paradise. Maybe it's another road which we'll take towards the sunrise. Maybe it's another dream which will guide to the daylight.
Something about that just stayed in my head. The harmony, the music alone of the song. Now I know you have videos out for Autumn Rain.
Yeah,
Lost in Jerusalem.
And we got to release one more video maybe in a couple of weeks for the last song, And Yet.
Ah, okay. But I think Sunrise should be given a chance to be promoted. Yeah,
we might do it. It's released already, but we might do a video on it. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But it's a good song. And basically, that's the song which was written in studio. And it was written, our drummer played a drum loop. We looped it. And then I was sitting with the keyboards and putting some harmonies and singing. And it just, the song, whole song came out in a few days in the studio by experimenting, you know.
You even do a total acoustic Marbella.
Yeah. Marbella, yeah.
Baby, one day it'll all be gone. Gone where the wind would blow. One cloudy afternoon.
So it's not just all electric. Like I said, it's very eclectic.
You know, in Marbella, especially when we're recording Marbella, first I tried to record on acoustic guitar, but we didn't get quite right feeling. So we went to the music shop. We bought the shittiest guitar for $10, maybe with nylon strings. And that's how we played. And it was perfect for this song. This sound just matched it so perfectly. So this guitar is recorded. It's $10 or $15 guitar, small nylon string for the kids.
I heard the same story about when Nirvana recorded Polly.
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain bought a $10 guitar.
Yeah.
They tried to re-record it, but the $10 guitar sounded better.
Exactly.
Just gives a different feel, because a lot of music today sounds like it's got the same production, you know?
Yeah, you got to make, we were thinking when we were recording this album to make something unusual, unexpected. Yeah. I mean, everybody expected to play acoustic guitar with iron strings, you know, and metal strings or whatever. But suddenly when you hear this kind of a weird sound, that's what grabs you. And basically the sound of the shit, the guitar perfectly matched the like a mood of the song, man.
Well, I think when Keith Richards recorded the riff to Street Fighting Man on a cassette recorder and then used that.
Yeah.
You know,
and do you know that Satisfaction is their demo version?
Yeah. It's
The manager just took it and brought it to the radio. They never recorded properly. That Satisfaction is a demo tape, man.
And that's what made these, I think, songs so distinctive, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because nowadays, I don't know what it is. You feel like the production all sounds the same. It's too, I'm not going to say it's too modern. I'm not going to say it's too digital.
It's becoming boring, man. It's becoming boring. When you're listening to the 10 songs, then they sound pretty much the same. I mean, on the third or fourth song, it's, I mean, you're just losing interest of listening further, you know. That's what I feel, you know.
And like I was, just to go back to the album, I think that the songs, you do a good job in production. And this is what was great about psychedelic bands in the 60s, always adding accents, whether it be a little bit of horns, a little bit of different musical instruments that no one would expect. Yeah. I think you did that on the last song, I think you added some musical instruments. I'm not sure what, but you can hear it.
Loads of keyboards, loads of little guitars, and the solo played by bass, which we put through the Moog. You know, Moog.
That's what it was just unique.
We even recorded Thunder on the beginning of Cocaine. It's a real Thunder, which we recorded outside of studio.
Right. Yeah, no one is experimenting like that.
Yeah, I mean, we were just having fun, you know. There was no rush. There was no A&R guys hanging over you and telling what you got to do. We were just having a headache. That's what the bands were doing in the 60s. I mean, yeah, you know, Beatles had such a big freedom, man. They had Abbey Road Studios for a year booked.
Yeah, of course I know.
That's what's made great, but then it's becoming, their music became more and more commercialized, more and more dictated by the A&R and some stupid people. And now, name me one band in the last 5 years. None.
I really can't. It all, you know, all the bands in the early 2000s, there was a lot of good stuff, especially coming out of the UK.
Yeah, there was some great. The last big thing was, I would say, Coldplay. That's it.
Yeah, and then they started, I wouldn't say, I don't like using the word sold out, but they gave in to the, I don't know if you want to call it, traditional pop sound of today.
Yeah.
You know, where they had something so unique, but whatever.
The first album was amazing. Second it was great, but then they turned into, I don't know, man.
They were listening to the commerce people, but you know, whatever. But I wish you all the luck with this new album, man. And I hope that people catch on in the States.
Thank you.
What are you planning on touring the States? Or is that...
You know what? Basically, we just started the campaign because the album was just released and it will be physically released on 18th of February in States.
Right.
I mean, we'll see how the PR campaign goes and we'll see where we go. But I would love to do some tour in States maybe in summer or whatever. I don't know. But we're getting a lot of good press and good, you know, reviews in Europe, so probably in Germany, because we are signed to German label MIG Music. So we probably will be touring Europe, and if God's will, we'll come to States if things will pick up. I mean, there should be a reason for coming.
Right. You know, sooner or later, COVID's going to break, and then we.
Yeah, and at the, in the end of March, I'm still going to Georgia to same studio, and we're going to record second album.
Oh, good.
Loads of material, man. Loads. So.
But I hope this album doesn't get lost. I think this is a really good album. Well, thank you so much, Nash.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And wish you all the best with the new album. I'll promote it at my end.
Thank you very much. Thanks, the best.
Man. Have a good day.
Thank you. All the best. Cheers.
Nash Albert. Thank you so much, Nash, for the interview. And listeners, you can pick up the album Yet. MIG Music put it out. You can pick it up at your local record store, order it, or go to nashalbert.com. NASHALBERT.com. Okay, everyone. Hope you enjoy this episode of the Goldmine Podcast. And also, don't forget to go to goldminemag.com. Also, go to shop.goldminemag.com. Like I said, to get vinyl albums, CDs, all your collectible needs. So we'll see you next time on the Goldmine Podcast. Bye now.
Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Long Shots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Long Shots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.